Turn to Proverbs 5 and verse 3. Proverbs 5:3. This will be the last verse that we'll cover tonight. It says, "For the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil." We're going to get into some really interesting stuff here, starting with this verse and going down through, well, most of the rest of the chapter. Some things that'll might make you a little uncomfortable even, but it is the Bible after all, so if that makes you uncomfortable, then tough. So the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, her mouth is smoother than oil. Let's look at that first phrase there. For the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb. So Solomon had given us the general reason for attending unto his wisdom in Proverbs 5:2, the previous verse, that thou mayest regard discretion and that thy lips may keep knowledge. And the way that we do that is verse 1, attending unto his wisdom and bowing our ear to his understanding. So that was the general reason, right? In general, we should attend unto wisdom so that we can know discretion and that we can speak wisdom out of our lips. Now he gives us the specific reason for attending unto wisdom. And I want you to notice that this verse begins with the conjunction for, which connects it to the previous verse. For the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb. Now, verses 1 and 2 were one sentence. So this verse here is expanding upon verses 1 and 2. Okay. So the specific reason for attending unto Solomon's wisdom, and therefore God's wisdom, since this is inspired scripture, is in order to learn discretion and to be able to identify and avoid the strange woman. And this instruction is particularly important for young men. Like regarding discretion, that's important for old men too. But this one is particularly important for young men because young men are the ones that are more likely to go after the strange woman. Although it does happen with old men, and I'm sure we all know of people that have done that, and it's shameful. It's a lot worse when you do it when you're older than when you do it when you're younger, although both of them are certainly wrong. But this is really important for young men. And as Braden gets older, not now, obviously, but as he gets older, when he gets to be a teenager, spend lots of time in Proverbs 5, 6, and 7, teaching him about the dangers of the strange woman. Because that is something that is going to be a huge temptation. It is a huge temptation for any teenage boy and young man out there. So a strange woman is a whore or a harlot, a prostitute, or a fornicatrice. Love that word, fornicatrice. Basically means a female fornicator. But I will prove this to you here with the definition. So she's just called a strange woman here. And if you're not familiar with King James English, you might think, well, she's just kind of a weirdo or something. But it's not speaking of a weirdo. Strange in the King James is not how we use strange today. So strange, when we're speaking of a strange woman, and that's the definition that I have here for you, is a harlot. Once again, another old word that probably a lot of people wouldn't even know what means anymore. But a harlot, when it's applied to a woman, which it actually is has other applications too, but when applied to a woman, it's as a general term of execration, specifically an unchaste woman, a prostitute, a strumpet. So an unchaste woman is what a harlot is. So now let's define some other words. Unchaste. We just keep defining these words with other words that nobody knows what means anymore. Unchaste means not chaste, lacking chastity, impure, lascivious. That didn't help a whole lot, but now we will define chaste and chastity and lascivious, and then we're going to figure out what a strange woman is. So chaste is pure from unlawful sexual intercourse, continent, virtuous. So in a person that is not chaste, a woman that is not chaste, is a harlot, and a woman that is not chaste is not pure from unlawful sexual intercourse. Chastity, because remember, unchaste is not chaste or lacking chastity. Chastity is purity from unlawful sexual intercourse, continence. So an unchaste woman is one that lacks purity from unlawful sexual intercourse. And then unchaste is also defined as lascivious. Lascivious is inclined to lust, lewd, or wanton. So when you put it together, a strange woman is a harlot, and a harlot is an unchaste woman, and an unchaste woman is one who is not pure from unlawful sexual intercourse. Now, we still have to go a little bit further, because then you would say, what is lawful sexual intercourse? Because the dictionary doesn't tell us what it is, it just states the fact, unlawful sexual intercourse. We have to go to the Bible to see what unlawful sexual intercourse is. And when you go, you find out that unlawful sexual intercourse is fornication and adultery, and sodomy for that matter, and I guess bestiality and other nasty stuff that the scripture talks about as well, necrophilia and all kinds of other horrible things. But in general, fornication and adultery. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 18. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 18, it says, flee fornication. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body, but he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. So there's the first form of unlawful sexual intercourse, and the second one is adultery. Hebrews 13 and verse 4. Hebrews 13 and verse 4. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. But whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. God will judge people that are whoremongers. Whoremonger is a fornicator. Somebody who, I'll define the word here in just a second, but somebody who has sex outside of marriage. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. It's not the act that is sinful. It is the actors, right? It's the people that's doing it. That's what's sinful. Marriage is honorable and all in the bed undefiled. You and your wife can do whatever you want. It's the actors, right? The people that aren't married, regardless of what they're doing, whether they're having regular old monogamous sex or not, it is still sinful if they're not married in the eyes of God. So, with the Bible defining it then, a strange woman then is a woman that has sex outside of marriage. Fornication, as I just mentioned, is voluntary sexual intercourse between a man in restricted use, an unmarried man, and an unmarried woman in Scripture extended to adultery. I love the King James. These other modern perversions use, in place of fornication, sexual immorality. And that can pretty much mean anything you want it to mean, because it is a general, vague term, and it would really be dependent on what you think morality is. Fornication, on the other hand, there's no wiggle room. Sexual intercourse between a man and an unmarried woman, or an unmarried man and an unmarried woman. Basically, two people that aren't married. That's fornication. So therefore, when we put it all together, a strange woman is not merely a prostitute. Because a lot of people think of that. Oh, a strange woman, she's a harlot, she's a prostitute. You know, oh, I don't go to prostitutes. You know, I'm okay. Or I don't sell my body. I'm okay. But a strange woman is not merely a prostitute. She's also a woman who offers the same service free of charge to boyfriends and men whom she dates. In other words, she's a woman that has sex before she's married. Period. That's a strange woman. That's a harlot. And that also describes, well, what, 90-some percent of all people out there? You know, just look out there. Pretty much you see a young woman that's not married, more than likely you're looking at a strange woman. Chances are. There are very few that save themselves from marriage anymore. Now, a strange woman's lips drop as an honeycomb, we're told here in Proverbs 3:5. Honeycomb is a structure of wax containing two series of hexagonal cells separated by thin partitions formed by bees for the reception of honey and their eggs. And then it goes on to say, I just thought this was interesting, the shape and arrangement of the cells secures the greatest possible economy at once of space and of material. So the hexagonal shapes, the six-sided shapes, is the most efficient way that you could possibly build a honeycomb. Even more than squares. Of course, circles, you're going to have a lot of unused space, but even more than squares, and I'm not sure why that is, but it's still, it's you use less space and material using hexagons to build combs than any other shape. It's amazing how those little bees, through millions and millions of years of evolution, of trial and error, figured out hexagons. They first tried circles. They realized, oh, there's wasted space here. Then they tried squares, but they were using too much material. They tried triangles, but that didn't work very well either. Then they went to octagons, and that was way too much work. They finally figured out, it was like after 65 million years, they figured out hexagons. Yeah. That's the way to do it.
When did they Amazing. Come upon the hexagons?
That was like 65 million years ago. They figured that out. Yeah.
So the rest of it was before that.
It was before that. It was like billions, gajillions of years ago. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, give or take 3.5 million years, something like that.
Maybe
I mean,
they thought about it while they're frozen in the ice age.
It could have been. Yeah. I mean, how asinine to believe in such a stupid theory that these bees evolved over time and figured out how to make these amazing honeycombs out of hexagonal shapes on their own. I mean, how dumb can you possibly get? But people believe this stuff. Honeybees are fascinating. Did you know that one honeybee will go out and he will find some pollen, a good source of pollen. And I kid you not, he comes back into the hive and he does a dance. This is no joke. He does a dance, and by the dance, the other bees know exactly where to go to find the pollen.
Amazing.
And the dance has something to do with the angle of the sun and the distance. He can somehow convey, based on the angle of the sun and something else, I don't know how people figured this out, but they have apparently, that yeah, those other little bees know exactly where to go by his little dance.
It's a honeybee sign language.
Basically, yeah.
Amazing. It's amazing.
I mean, they know exactly, they all have their own little jobs. It's a vicious little place because as soon as you get to where you can't produce anymore, they just kill you and kick you out. But you wouldn't want to organize society like that. But they're extremely efficient. It's just fascinating, absolutely amazing. And people could think that that stuff all evolved over time. Totally crazy. So honeycombs drop honey. You know, the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb. Well, honeycombs drop honey. I just want to show you this. This is what Solomon is using the figure to refer to. 1 Samuel 14:25-27. My uncle raises honeybees, and it seemed like every time I would go to visit him for several years in a row, I would come right at the time of year whenever it was time to go open the hive and do something, and I just happened to show up right as he's getting in the truck with all of his equipment. Oh, hey, come on with me. You can help me out. And, of course, he's clothed, you know, with long sleeves, long pants, everything. I'm in shorts and a T-shirt, and I do get a little, you know, thing to put over my head. But then one time he had caught a swarm of bees. He put a box out there with some lemongrass or something, and the bees could smell that, and they would go and congregate in this box, and then you take the box down, close it up, and then you put the bees in the hive, and then you've got a free swarm. Well, so anyway, he got this thing, and so I got to go out and help him, and we go out in the middle of a field, and he opens up this box, and I mean, there's a ball of honey a ball of bees about as big as a basketball in there, and we're going to put these hive thing. And he tips it upside down and then proceeds to beat on the thing to try to get them to come out. And I'm just, you know, waiting to die here, basically. And yeah, it was something else. A couple of them got mad and they ended up chasing him. He had to walk a couple hundred yards way out in the field. You just keep walking and eventually they'll leave you alone. But they're like the attack bees or something. There's some of them that are nominated to be the security force, basically. And they chased him way off forever until they left him alone. But anyway, yeah. So, yeah, I know a little bit about beekeeping anyway, and it's quite fascinating. Okay, so anyway, 1 Samuel 14:25-27. This is whenever... I think it was Jonathan and his men were off in battle, and Saul said that they were not to eat anything until they had killed David, I believe was the scenario here. And Jonathan didn't hear that, and he sees this honey and he eats some of it. But anyway, it says there in 1 Samuel 14:25-27, It says, and all they of the land came to a wood, and there was honey upon the ground. And when the people were come into the wood, behold, the honey dropped, but no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. But Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Wherefore he put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand, and dipped it in an honeycomb, and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. So the honey was dropping, right? The lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, just like this honey was dropping. Now honey is sweet, we're told in Proverbs 24 and verse 13. Proverbs 24 and verse 13. You know, something generally drops whenever there's an overabundance of it and it can't be contained anymore. Well, the strange woman's lips, stuff are coming out of them. Flattering words are coming out of them. We'll get to that in just a second. Proverbs 14 and verse 24, pardon me, 24 and verse 13, my son, eat thou honey because it is good, and the honeycomb which is sweet to thy taste. So honey is sweet, and pleasant words are also sweet like honey. Look at Proverbs 16 and verse 24. Proverbs 16, 24. I'm going somewhere with this. It says, pleasant words are as an honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. So you probably had somebody say pleasant words to you before, maybe just pay you a nice compliment or give you a word of encouragement or something like that, and it feeds your soul, right? It's sweet to the soul. This is what that scripture is talking about. These are all good things so far. Honey's sweet, pleasant words are sweet like honey. And the lips of a man's wife should drop like an honeycomb to him. Song of Solomon 4 and verse 11. Song of Solomon 4 and verse 11. Nothing wrong with a woman's lips dropping as an honeycomb if it's towards her husband. Song of Solomon 4 and verse 11. It says, thy lips, O my spouse, drop as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under thy tongue, and the smell of thy garments is like the smell of Lebanon. So yes, for a married couple, this is a great thing. Her words and her kisses should be sweet, a man's wife, that is. But the strange woman perverts the way that a godly woman relates to her husband and instead directs her affection towards a whoremonger that she's not married to. Like I said, it's not the words, it's who speaks them, right? It's not the act in the marriage bed, it's who does it. Right? The strange woman is using words that would be fine for a wife to use for her husband, but she shouldn't be using them towards somebody that's not her husband. So her words are sweet. The words of a strange woman are sweet, and they're seductive. And her words drop off of her lips, just like honey drops off of a honeycomb. She uses fair speech to seduce men, Proverbs 4 and verse 21. Proverbs 7, what did I say? 4. Proverbs 7, thank you. Proverbs 7 and verse 21. This is the tale of the man that went to the strange woman and ended up going there for his life. Proverbs 7 and verse 21, it says, with her much fair speech she caused him to yield, with the flattering of her lips she forced him. Now, it's fine for a man's wife to flatter him with her lips and to, you know, talk nice to him, to convince him to do what she wants him to do, right? If you know what I'm saying. Trying to keep it PG here. There's nothing wrong with that, right? But when a woman that's not married is doing that, that's another story. She uses fair speech to seduce men. Fair is beautiful to the eye, of pleasing form or appearance, good looking, of sounds or odors, and sounds would be speech, of course. It is agreeable, delightful, of language, so we're getting even closer here, of language or diction, it is elegant, hence a fair speaker, through her much fair speech, through her much elegant speech, in other words. Elegant, and get this is so interesting, elegant is tastefully ornate in attire, sometimes in unfavorable sense, dainty or foppish. So elegant is tastefully ornate. And it's interesting, the words of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, which is sweet, right? She uses fair speech Fair speech is elegant speech, which is tastefully ornate. Isn't that interesting? Her speech is tasteful. Except it's wicked. But it does sound good. So the speech of a strange woman is tastefully ornate and delightful like honey. It makes perfect sense why it says that her lips drop as in honeycomb. And her mouth is smoother than oil, we're told. In the remainder of Proverbs 5:3. Her lips drop as in honeycomb and her mouth is smoother than oil. So what does this mean? Well, if you look at Psalm 55 and verse 21, we see that the wicked use words that are smoother than butter and softer than oil to deceive their prey. Psalm 55 and verse 21. Psalm 55, 21. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. So there's two different things going on. What's going on inside and what's coming out the mouth are two totally different things. This is what you call deception, right? We learned all about that here a few months ago. His words were softer than oil, but yet were they drawn swords. This is how somebody deceives you. They use good words and fair speeches, right? They say nice things to you to get your guard down. They butter you up. They flatter you. They tell you how good you are, how great you are, how much they love and appreciate you. And then once you're guard comes down, then the sword comes out, right? The words are drawn swords, yet they're smooth as oil. The strange woman uses flattery like oil to butter up her victims. Let me give you a few verses here. Proverbs 6 and verse 24. Proverbs 6 and verse 24. It says, to keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of the strange woman. This is what's dropping off of her lips. It's flattery. It's these nice, fair words. We already looked at Proverbs 7:21, and then Proverbs 7 in verse 15. She says, therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. Doesn't she make him feel so special? I've been looking for you all night. I've been standing on that corner looking just for you. That's why I got all dressed up for you. Doesn't that make you feel special? Oh, you're so smart. Oh, really? Oh, you are a... You're a doctor, huh? Oh, I've always had such high respect for doctors, taking care of people. Fine-looking man you are, too. By the way, my husband's not home. He's taken a bag of money, gone away on a long journey. He'll come home at the day appointed. Decked my bed with coverings of tapestry and fine linen, carvings of Egypt. Come on up. Let's take our fill of love for the morning or for the night. Watch out for somebody like that. Flattery is the action or process of flattering. False or insincere praise, adulation, cajolery, blandishment. You know what cajolery is? Flattery. No, you know what blandishment is? Flattery. Or cajolery. Either one. To flatter is, when it's speaking of an animal or a bird, this is kind of funny, to show delight or fondness by wagging the tail, making a caressing sound, etc. It is also to try to please or win the favor of a person by obsequious speech or conduct to court fawn upon. So you kind of see that a lot of times we have the primary definition, which is sometimes a natural definition, and then there's an application of that that is more of a figurative or a spiritual or something type definition. And this is interesting, to show delight or fondness by wagging the tail or so on. And did I ever tell you the story about when I was back in Pennsylvania just this last time, we went to this little Farmer's Inn thing, and it was like a little mini zoo, and there was this peacock there. And you know the male peacocks, they're the ones that have the long feathers, they're the ones that really are quite interesting looking. Well, he was trying, it was reverse. He was the strange man, apparently. He was trying to flatter his suitor. And so he fans out these feathers. I mean, this was like probably 8 feet wide or something, enormous. And here's this dinky little bird inside this huge fan of these feathers. And he's, like turkeys strut around. Well, he's doing the same thing. He's strutting. And she is just paying no attention. It was the funniest thing. It's, you know, it's like some poor guys, you know, after they're married or something. It's pathetic. It is that way for some people. But anyway, she's paying no attention. And then to get her attention even more, he starts shaking his feathers really fast, like, and they're vibrating super fast. And she still is just eating, like paying no attention whatsoever. The guy had no shame. We're all standing there watching him, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. But he was literally trying to flatter her with his feathers, and she was having none of it. But the strange woman does a similar thing. To flatter is to use obsequious speech. Obsequious, I just looked this up in my handy-dandy new OED, pulled that off the shelf today and took a look at that. Mm. I'm really loving those things. Wow, they're great. But obsequious basically means overly compliant or overly submissive. So when somebody is just bending over backwards and just going to do anything for you, anything you ask, oh, no problem, you know, watch out for somebody like that because they're probably setting you up. So men, if any woman, including your wife, ever meets you with the excitement that your dog does, be very suspicious. When you walk in the door and your wife is just jumping up and down and just so happy to see you, oh, I've missed you so much, I can't wait, I've been so happy to see you, and I've been thinking about you all day, and watch out, she probably wants something. And especially if it's some woman you're not married to, and she's just super excited to see you. Watch out. If a woman you just met is lavishing praise on you, beware because she's probably setting a net for your feet. Proverbs 29 and verse 5. Proverbs 29 and verse 5. It says, a man that flattereth his neighbor spreadeth a net for his feet. So yes, he's probably trying to trick you. He's trying to catch you if he flatters you. And so is the strange woman. And her flattering mouth will work ruin. Proverbs 26 and verse 28. Yes, the words sound great when you're hearing them, and it puffs you up, and it makes you think quite highly of yourself to think that somebody else thinks so highly of you. But there's a net set for your feet, and the end is going to be ruin. Proverbs 26 and verse 28, a lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it, and a flattering mouth worketh ruin. And we will see when we get to the end of Proverbs chapter 5, and then when we get to the end of Proverbs chapter 6, and when we get to the end of Proverbs chapter 7, we are going to see how the flattering mouth worketh ruin, because all of those things end the same way with the dreadful condition of the man that goes to the strange woman. So next time we will pick up with verse 4, Lord willing.